getting virtual education. And if you read Charles Lucier's story on the front page of Sunday's Advocate, you'll note that the Virtual Academy is having lots of problems. And this comes amid a new controversy over Kate Brumley, the superintendent of education, dropping quarantines for exposed students despite criticism from the governor and from other top health officials. And again, if you'd like to chime in, we welcome your input. 877-217-5757. Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Well, as I read Charles' story, 1,300 children transferred this year to the EBR Virtual Academy. It's the lone home for online instruction for the East Baton Rouge Parish school system. It's a school that grew dramatically in size after the school year started, and this is in the COVID age. And your son, was he one of the newbies?
He was. He actually completed elementary school last year virtually. Like, I believe it was one quarter of our students opted for virtual. We were really hoping that we could put him back in person this year, but as we watched the numbers going up and up with the Delta variant, we just had to make the decision that the safest option for our family was to continue with the virtual learning.
But as Charles Lucier reports, there are some problems with this education, the quality of it. What's the biggest problem right now?
Well, the biggest problem right now is that the middle and high school grades have been outsourced to a private company named Proximity Learning. And we haven't had enough teachers for our mm-hmm. students. So here we are nearing the end of the first quarter, and my son hasn't even had a math instructor yet. But I've talked to parents in the seventh and eighth grades and higher that their kids haven't even had any teachers to come at all since the school's year has started. And I mean, I guess the way we're feeling is that if we sent our kids on a bus every day to a school building where they went into a classroom with no teacher, day after day after day, all the way well into October, if that was happening in an actual building, it would be a scandal. It would be on the news. It would be everywhere. And there would be a sense of urgency to fix that situation. We don't understand why in a virtual setting there isn't that sense of urgency to make sure that our kids are getting instruction.
Well, as the Advocate report from Mr. Lucier notes, on September 22nd, which was just 15 days ago, Proximity reported 36 vacancies out of 83 teaching positions at the virtual school. So that's getting close to almost half. It's not a good situation, is it?
It's not a good situation. And we understand that there is a nationwide teacher shortage. That's a reality that schools all over the country are dealing mm-hmm. with. However, it doesn't absolve our district of the responsibility of making sure that some level of instruction is happening for our children. There's a lot of concern about learning loss related to COVID. When you have children that don't have any instruction, especially in their core classes, going, you know, all the way a full quarter into the school year, these kids are going to be falling behind their peers, and it's really just not an acceptable situation. It's a really frustrating situation as a parent to watch my son get up, mm-hmm. do his thing, get ready for school, log in, excited to learn, and to find that there's no teacher yet again and be disappointed and be frustrated. It's been really hard. It's been hard on our family. It's been hard on all of the families that have been dealing with this with the Virtual Academy so far.
Again, 877-217-5757 if you'd like to join Jennifer Harding. She is a parent. She's also a community organizer. But this is something I think she would be front and center on, even if she were not involved in some other endeavors in our community. As we have reported over the last few days, and Will Sintel did a good job of capturing the controversy swirling about Superintendent Brumley, State Superintendent of Education Cade Brumley's plan to let students exposed to the coronavirus remain in the classroom sparked pushback from the education and health communities, even the board that hired him. Sandy Holloway, the president of BESSE, called Brumley's announcement abrupt and inconsistent, and these are sentiments echoed by the governor of Louisiana and by others, and yet Cade Brumley believes, I'm sure, he wouldn't do this unless he thought it was the right thing to do, but I gather many parents and some teachers don't think it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, I was incredibly disappointed to hear that announcement and really confused considering that we still seem to be very much in a real pandemic, and that goes completely against the recommendations that we've continued to hear about from the CDC, from the governor's office, from the health department, the Louisiana Department of Health. And so, and it was really troubling to find out that it was seemed to be a decision that was made unilaterally without input from the governor or the experts, you know, that the governor has on his team, or even members of the BSEE board themselves. And so I feel relieved that our superintendent, Dr. Narcisse in Baton Rouge, is going to continue to go with the COVID protocols that we've had in place from the beginning. But I worry that we have school districts all around us that are going to start loosening their restrictions. You know, and COVID is a virus that doesn't care what school district you go to, that doesn't care what political affiliation you have. And so this is, you know, I don't think that this is the right decision. I believe that it's reckless.
877-217-5757 for a time with Jennifer Hardy. Anne Marie in Shenandoah. Anne Marie, you're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. I just like to situate this discussion, which is very.
All right, Anne Marie, I'm not so sure what happened.
There
you go. Go ahead.
Okay. I'd like to situate this discussion in the broader context of teacher shortage. And now I think parents are starting to feel what teacher educators like myself at LSU have been feeling for several years, which is we simply are not producing the supply of teachers that we need to make schools work anywhere. And Baton Rouge has got to get extremely creative, and I'd like parents and community members to support Dr. Narcisse and his cabinet in any efforts they can make and that they're trying to make in hiring, recruiting, retaining teachers. This has got to be stuff like paying stipends, paying hiring bonuses, forgiving student loans, because our students who are, in the many cases, tops educated will go to Texas where they start at $56,000 a year as a first-year teacher. We cannot compete with that, and I'm highly unsurprised that there is such a teaching shortage being seen all over virtually and physically.
Thank you, Anne Marie. Your thoughts, Jennifer?
Yeah, that's a great point, Anne Marie, and I totally agree with you. I talk to teachers all the time, and it seems that morale is very low in our district. We are like hemorrhaging teachers. We are losing some of our best veteran teachers. Some of our veteran teachers felt like they had to retire because they didn't feel safe to return to the classroom. And so that is contributing to the fact that we don't have enough teachers. A stipend was offered at the last school board meeting to try to recruit more virtual teachers. I'm hoping at tonight's meeting we'll hear an update on that. However, it was very low, and it was, you know, the budget that was set aside for the teacher stipend was half of what was proposed for Dr. Narcisse's to train his executive cabinet. So I feel like we need to be making sure that our number one priority in this district is supporting the good teachers that we do have and coming up with creative solutions to recruit and retain, quality educators. We have a tremendous pool of talent in this city.
Again, your email is talk@talklouisiana.org. You can get in our remaining time with Jennifer at 877-217-5757. Here's one from Roberto. Saying, Jim, I have a neighbor who is a teacher in EBR and says at least 150 in-class teachers have left to other parishes because of changes from the new superintendent, from Roberto in Mid-City. Have you heard anything along those lines?
I follow the school board pretty closely and have seen the personnel changes, and we are losing lots of teachers. I know that in, I believe it's Livingston Parish, they just offered some bonuses and a pay raise. I think we have to come up. We have to really reach in, get to understand our teachers and what their challenges are, and do something a little bit more creative, and really invest. This is our children we're talking about. This is our future. We really need to be investing in it carefully.
Again, 877-217-5757. We'll spend a bit more time with Jennifer Harding, who's a parent, a community activist, has a son with a great name, Atticus, as in Atticus Finch. And he is a virtual student and having some challenges because the instruction just isn't where it should be. We'll talk more about that and more when we return after this 90-second pause on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. A few more minutes with Jennifer Harding, a parent and activist, and her son is a student at the EBR Virtual Academy with about 1,300 students. And as we learned from Charles Lucier and his story that was in the October 3rd issue of The Advocate, that about half of the teaching positions are open there. So it's not the best situation for students and not for her son, Atticus. And a question from a listener, and again, you can reach us at talk@talklouisiana.org. This is from Heather downtown asking, why did you send your son to this school?
So for us, it seemed like the safest option for our family. As I mentioned previously, we did virtual education last year. I am what they call the sandwich generation, and that means I'm raising a kid, but I'm also responsible for taking care of my aging parents with health issues here in Baton Rouge. And so we have made tremendous changes to our lifestyle to keep everyone in our family safe throughout this pandemic. And we were really like hoping that our son could go and have a normal as it could be in-person learning experience this year. But just leading into as the school year was starting and watching the numbers climb and seeing how children were being impacted more than ever with this new Delta variant, it just was the right decision for our family.
And as we mentioned in the open, Jennifer grew up in this community, went to McKinley, and left to go to California where she received her degree at a liberal arts school, right?
I spent some time at Mills College in Oakland, California.
Yeah, there you go. And came back, and some people would wonder why you left what many consider to be paradise for a return home where things are challenging. But I when I was in California a little while ago, when the governor, Gavin Newsom, was averting a recall, all the spots that I heard on the air, and there were a lot of those, were talking about how he had screwed up public education in California. They said they were 42nd in America. Well, Louisiana would dream to be 42nd, based on what you know. How does the situation in the pandemic age compare here with other places such as California?
Well, you know, the pandemic has been challenging everywhere. I mean, there's no doubt about that. However, there are different ways that it's being approached, the mitigation of COVID in other states versus in Louisiana. We see vaccination rates very, very high in California. We see policies that are, you know, like masking, contact tracing, testing of students, mm-hmm. testing of teachers, vaccine mandates. I believe that Gavin Newsom just announced that there's going to be a mandatory vaccine mandate for the COVID vaccine for all students in California very soon. So, I mean, we see the mitigation strategies a little bit more strenuous, I think, in other places. However, I would like to say that Dr. Narcisse here in Baton Rouge has really led the way in our state and has taken the pandemic very seriously and continues to put some really good protocols in place to protect our children.
All right. Another listener notes a column from Stephanie Grace in The Advocate that ran yesterday in the headline, Cade Brumley gives aid comfort to the crackpots. That's the headline, and she starts, Stephanie does. I have no idea how State Education Superintendent Cade Brumley votes, but he's always come across as a smart and responsible person, whether he leans right or left. I never pegged him as a hero to Louisiana's Give Me Liberty or Give Me Death cult, but death is what we're talking about, tragically, due to the fatal effects of COVID-19, which has now killed more than 14,000 people in Louisiana and more than 700,000 nationwide. The good news is that things are starting to turn around here, and after a fourth surge propelled by the Delta variant, that's at least partly due to strict but wise mitigation measures such as Governor John Bel Edwards' reimposed mask requirement and vaccination mandates in numerous settings from public universities to Saints games, although the overall vaccination rate here remains way too low. But Cade Brumley is taking it on the chin in this column and in other places for his decision on quarantines. And based on what you told me a few minutes ago, Jennifer, at this point, it's not a huge issue in East Baton Rouge Parish, but if you've got people in surrounding parishes or playing by different rules, it eventually will matter.
It absolutely matters. And I think it's very important that we don't lower our guard. Numbers are going down, and that's a really good thing. Case numbers are going down, but our vaccination rates need to be higher. And we have heard experts say that we can potentially expect another spike later in the fall and winter. And so I think it's really important that we stay vigilant and continue to keep these measures in place. And it's also, you know, this Delta variant really impacts children, and we don't have a vaccine that's available to all children yet. Pfizer just announced today that they're trying to get the 5 to 11 vaccine, and I'm waiting eagerly for that because I have an 11-year-old son who I would really like to have vaccinated, but he doesn't have access to that vaccine yet.
Are you hopeful things will get better?
I am hopeful things will get better. I think we have learned a lot about this disease. We've learned a lot about what we can do and the measures we can take and put in place to keep ourselves safe, our children safe, our community safe. And I think we just need to hang in there, trust the science, listen to the experts, and continue to do what we need to do to really get rid of this vaccine.
Well, we will.
I mean, this pandemic. Sorry.
We will keep in touch with you. And thanks for coming in and sharing your story. And
thank you.
Good to meet you, Jennifer Harding. It's a pleasure. And coming in just a bit, we'll hear from Mark Ballard, as is our Thursday custom, the Capitol Bureau Chief Leader for The Advocate and Picayune, the newspaper of record in Louisiana. And a listener says, let's be sure to talk about John Neely Kennedy, who turned 70 next month, and he now has a challenger, a Louisiana native, Navy veterans, launching a bid to challenge the state's junior senator in next year's election. Luke Mixon is the name, a 42-year-old Democrat from Avoyelles Parish and a former fighter pilot with the U.S. Navy. He writes, "I'm running to represent Louisiana in the U.S. Senate because Senator Kennedy continues to play partisan games at our expense. As a Navy veteran and fighter pilot, I know what it truly means to serve my country." And, of course, John Kennedy, like most members of his generation, he was born in 1951, prime Vietnam time. He found a way to go to college and avoid combat duty in Vietnam. But this young guy, Luke Mixon, is a warrior, and he's younger, and he's ready to go. John West, who listens in New Roads and emails me frequently about the show, the other day he was noting that people who are 70 are over the hill and knocking on heaven's door. Well, Kennedy turns 70 next month, and I, as a person who's only 7 years from 70, I might be offended by that, but I think the rule should be if you can bench press your weight, you're okay if you're 70 years old. And my hero, Jack LaLanne, when he turned 70, Alondra Villarreal has sent me this, and I remember reading about his heroic feats. And when he turned 70 years old, what did Jack LaLanne do, Alondra? This is what Jack LaLanne did at 70. He towed 70 rowboats, one with several guests, from the Queensway Bridge in the Long Beach Harbor to the Queen Mary, 1 mile. That's what Jack LaLanne did when he was 70 years old. So I'm expecting a similar feat next month from John Neely Kennedy, our junior senator from the great state of Louisiana. Maybe he'll be out at Lake Pontchartrain, maybe on the Mississippi River towing rowboats as he swims to shore, 1 mile. Let's see if JNK can do what Jack LaLanne did in 1984. And last night on his talk show, the beleaguered Coach Orgeron of LSU, he was questioned about his love life. Now he's gone through a second divorce. He was photographed in bed with a girlfriend. And here's the question that came from a listener.
The call. Let's go to Jay Boy right here in Baton Rouge. Jay Boy, you're on with Coach O.
Hey, Coach, how's it going?
All right, Jay Boy.
Before I get in my call about special teams, I have to be an embarrassing big brother real quick. My little sister is in attendance there tonight celebrating her 20th birthday.
All right. Happy birthday.
Wish her a happy birthday.
Yeah, where you at? Happy 20th birthday. What's her name?
Bebe.
Bebe?
Little Bebe. That's what we call her.
All right. That sounds like a familiar name I know. What's up?
Yeah.
Happy birthday, Bebe. Where you at? All
yeah,
right.
Now, she is a little blonde-headed girl, so try not to have sex with her and put it on.
Oh, man.
Oh, come on, man.
Really? Wow.
I'm a man.
All right. Let's talk about Kentucky, Coach. Mark Stoops, he's
hey,
been.
Hey, let me say something right there. You know, down in the bayou, we got a nice little fishing hole for people like that.
That's Ed Orgeron. Going to Kentucky as a 3.5-point underdog. The Tigers are reeling at 3-2, and Coach O, he might get fired. But you know what? If he gets fired, his contract says he gets $22 million. We'll talk more with Mark Ballard about this and other matters. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Alondra Villarreal is producing, and Mark Ballard is our Thursday custom, is our guest, surveying the world as we know it from the Capitol. And we have some information that we need to get from Mark. And if you'd like to ask him a question, the man who knows most things about most things, he is at your service, 877-217-5757. And Mark writes a column every Sunday in The Advocate, and let's start there, his column of the last week. Vaccinations fall along partisan lines. And we saw a poll from the Kaiser Foundation last week showing that 90% of those who are identified as Democrats have been vaccinated, only 58% of Republicans nationwide. But Mark reported in his column, the pro-Trump parishes had an average of 39.2 vaccinated. And the numbers, of course, are different in the 10 parishes that Trump lost, mostly cities and majority black parishes. The average rate of people in Louisiana having received both shots is 49.2%, 10 points higher. So, Mark, it does appear that, unfortunately, that there is a partisan divide which is affecting the health of the state of Louisiana.
Yeah, well, I got a lot of blowback on that column, but the it didn't seem like that was a any big finding, considering the Republicans attacking the president and Governor Edwards on just about anything he's trying to do to mitigate the spread of the COVID. So he did that, I got the idea of doing it of just basically checking the election numbers versus the LDH numbers on that, and it came out to be true. So, and pretty significantly too, if you start looking at those parishes, I mean, there's only one or two of them that are above 35% of vaccination, and they drug up everybody. So but most of them are below.
You said you got blowback. Some people probably didn't like the fact that you were reporting just facts, but people sometimes they don't like it when the facts are not in line with what they believe or what they want to believe.
Yeah, well, and sadly, I got a whole lot of, and I found it sad anyway. With why didn't you compare to black people, and you know, why pick on the Republicans, you know, and I was, you know, well, first off, minority inoculations have been going up as the various problems that they had, which was mostly how to get it and where to get it, were dealt with. So they've been going up. The Republicans, for the most part, have still been not getting shots and have been against efforts to try to get people to get shots. You know, so that was the blowback was, you know, why are you picking on Republicans?
Well, when it comes to partisan matters, we're seeing it in Washington, D.C., in which the Republican delegation is solidly against President Biden's plans, with the exception on some of the plans from Bill Cassidy. And he even got plaudits on the editorial page of The Advocate, or the editorial that ran on Sunday. When it comes to rebuilding U.S., Bill Cassidy takes Louisiana's corner. What happens when a bill gets so wound up in national politics that the majority of your delegation in Congress votes against a measure good for your state? That's the question posed. I think Lanny Keller probably wrote this one. It says, we want to hear the bottom line. U.S. Senator Bill Cassidy, Republican Baton Rouge, calls the bill he helped negotiate through the U.S. Senate is a tremendous one for Louisiana. He's alone among his Republican colleagues in our state's delegation, which is officially for the rebuilding our state desperately needs, but nitpicks any efforts to achieve big things. And this means that our congressman in this area, Garrett Graves, is against the Biden plan, the infrastructure plan, and so is Steve Scalise, so is Clay Higgins, Mike Johnson, Julia Letlow. They're all against it, as is John Neely Kennedy. So your thoughts about why partisanship comes to everything that involves anything that Joe Biden is for, including raising the debt ceiling, which is something President Trump did three times without Republican pushback. But politics seems to trump everything, literally, Mark.
It is. And now, if you ask the congressman, they have reasons for why they don't back the infrastructure bill. I mean, Julia Letlow was saying that, oh, well, San Francisco will get more than Louisiana, but that's not actually true. If you look at the definitions in the thing, as Bill Cassidy points out, it basically spells Louisiana, for folks that had disaster areas. I'm kind of thinking that it has more to do with not wanting to give Joe Biden the win. You know, and that's what happens when you get into this kind of partisan scorched earth business. You know, it's that seems to be happening with the debt limit as well. So though they are getting close to a short term deal over that before the country goes broke. But I believe it's a partisan issue. And that's where the fisticuffs have started.
And Democrats are guilty of this as well, but Democrats did not cause the debt ceiling to not be raised during Donald Trump in his presidency or in George Bush. And the Republican presidents are the ones who have run up most of the debt. When Bill Clinton left office, there was debt, but there was no deficit, and the debt was coming down. And then George Bush, of course, spent us into a bad spot, a really bad spot, and caused an economic collapse. And President Obama addressed it. And even though the deficit was going down during Obama's year, the debt went up. And then during the 4 years of Trump, both the debt and the deficit went up, and Republicans largely did not say a word. And that brings us to the U.S. Senate race, Mark, between now Luke Mixon and John Kennedy. Now, this guy doesn't have any money now, but if he were to catch fire, I'm sure the Democratic Party nationally would find a way to send him lots of money. He is, on paper, a good candidate. He's from a different generation. He's 28 years younger than John Kennedy, and he's a veteran and a warrior. John Kennedy was not. He was, for all intents, a draft dodger during the Vietnam War. Your thoughts about the matchup between Kennedy and Mixon as we know it right now?
Well, first off, start off by knowing that the last West Point graduate that I voted or that I bet against was John Bel Edwards. I didn't think he had much of a chance at all, but you can see my prognostication skills right there. The Democrats, if you recall, they ran the mayor of Shreveport, who was also a combat veteran and West Point graduate, and
he got trounced.
He got trounced, right. And then against Bill Cassidy. This guy, I don't know much more about him than that he was a fighter pilot. And we'll see how that goes. A lot of the operatives for the Democratic Party have lined up and have joined his team, which may help for someone who has never run for anything before. And, you know, all of a sudden that John Kennedy sent me a please send me money ad today, because he was sure that this war veteran was a handpicked liberal run to throw me out. And he needs money to save
that's right, that's
America
right.
from the radical left.
Well, I tell you what, you and I are both on Senator Kennedy's mailing list, and I've been getting in the last week several emails from him. He said he was running around like Disco Duck in one of them. And on this one, he says, friends, the pick is in. The National Democrats have announced their handpicked liberal to run against me. I need your help now more than ever if we're going to save America from the radical left's agenda. He's been endorsed by Jamie Harrison, the DNC chair, supports President Biden's Green New Deal infrastructure bill. And worst of all, he's using the Democrat and Hollywood left money machine to raise money. Translation, he's going to have a blank check to try to push all his radical ideas down the throats of conservative Americans. Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer want to silence me in my loud mouth, and they think this guy is the man for the job. Well, I know one thing. You'll have my back in this fight. So if you can, I was hoping that we could show the left that we don't need blank checks to keep Louisiana red. Let's show the left that the socialist agenda has no place in Louisiana and that their baby Beto candidate can find another state to push Pelosi's policies. That from John Neely Kennedy. And then a nice photo of him with a cup of coffee and a pair of blue jeans, not the Hart, Schaffner, and Mark suits he wears in his spots, but it says, God bless you and your family, John Kennedy, as he prepares to celebrate his 70th birthday. John Kennedy has never been shy, nor has he been deficient in raising money, Mark.
No, and I think that this is this is just a political thing. They all seem to do this and overstate. I don't know anything about Mr. Nixon, but I can't imagine him being a Beto O'Rourke or a copy of Beto O'Rourke. So, and it's politics, and I have a feeling that we're going to be going through this for the next year.
Well, a listener notes that in 1960, Kennedy beat Nixon, and in 2022, Kennedy will beat Mixon. And he probably will. It's very hard to unseat an incumbent U.S. senator, and John Kennedy is popular in Louisiana. Yeah, he was popular. He won races over and over for state treasurer, although he did have to run for the Senate three times before he finally got it. And now at age 70, he's going to run for a seat that if he is elected, he will hold until he is 77 years old, which will be exactly 1 year younger than the president of the United States, Joseph Robinette Biden Jr., is right now. So Mark Ballard and I will talk more about what's happening near and far. And we got some folks waiting in line. Please be patient. Stay on the line. We won't be gone long. And there is a line or two open. 877-217-5757, your Talk Louisiana number. And we return after this 2 minute timeout. This is Jim Inkster. Pleased to have you with us for Talk Louisiana. Mark Ballard with us for the remainder of the hour, the Capitol Bureau Chief for the newspaper of record in the great state of Louisiana. 877-217-5757. David in Atlanta. David, you're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning to you. You're on with Mark.
Good morning. You know, Senator Kennedy makes me sick. The Republicans vote to give Delta Airlines a huge tax corporate tax break so they can buy their shares back and pay the executives huge bonuses. But when it comes to giving family and children help and giving women paid maternity leave, the pro-life party is against it. Every industrial nation in the world has paid maternity leave. But Senator Kennedy, a pro-life Republican, is against it. And, you know, given that the Republicans are practicing voter suppression and would install Trump as authoritarian president, don't you think it's time that the Democratic Party grows a pair and stacks the Supreme Court?
All right. Your thoughts, Mark Ballard? Mark?
It sounds like a fairly partisan.
It sounds like a little bit about it. Yeah. I think David's got a position. He doesn't like John Kennedy a lot. And I notice a lot of Democrats in Louisiana, they have a visceral hatred for this guy. And I think it's because he was, you know, he was one of the Democrats. He was not a centrist Democrat. At one time, not so long ago, fewer than 20 years ago, he was a left of center Democrat, pro-choice, John Kerry supporter. What the heck happened to John Neely Kennedy? You know what Roy Fletcher said, Mark? He said he learned how to read a poll.
That's exactly. I fall back onto, well, it's a politics, and he's a politician, and you know, I'm firmly convinced that if the polls showed him that he needed to be, you know, someone from the Khmer Rouge, and then he would believe in that as well. So,
well, Foster Campbell said not so long ago. We're talking in the last 20 years. He went to see John Neely Kennedy at his office, and Kennedy had an oil painting of Earl Long on his wall. And Earl Long, he would not be in the same corner with Mitch McConnell or Lindsey Graham. He was a populist Democrat like his late brother Huey. Henry at the Country Club. Well, go ahead. I'm sorry. You want to go ahead if you.
No, I remember that painting as well. But I think that you're looking at the politics of it. But what Earl Long was a manipulator and of issues. You know, I think that he was a practical politician, and maybe that's what Kennedy was looking at.
Well, and I remember his brother George, who's one of the best political consultants in the business, and at one time handled John when he ran unsuccessfully for Attorney General 30 years ago. He said the future of Louisiana is Earl Long in a Brooks Brothers suit, and maybe it's Earl Long in a Hart, Schaffner & Marks suit for John Neely Kennedy. Henry at the Country Club. Henry, you are on with Mark.
Well, hello, Mr. Jim. Hello, Mr. Mark. Hope y'all having a great day today. You know, and I want to, I guess, prematurely wish Senator Kennedy a happy 70th birthday, or so he says. He doesn't look a day under 80. I got a question, though. Has anybody seen any of Senator Kennedy's medical checkups or health reports? Because we remember what happened when Alan Ellender was running against Bennett Johnson back in 72.
All right. Now, I, as far as I know, John Kennedy's in tip-top shape. And he does use the Senate gym, and he even mused to me that the great thing about it is that only senators are allowed. No staffers, no relatives, no friends. It's just senators, so you only have 100 opportunities. And he said usually when he's in there, the only other guy he sees or girl is Chuck Schumer. And Schumer also looks like a guy who needs to work on his fitness, but it's nice that John Kennedy is using the Senate gym, Mark.
Well, yeah, and let's not forget, they're 70 years old. I mean, it's kind of hard to stay in shape as you get older. And so at least he's making a stab at trying it. And as far as the underlying of the question is, I've never heard of Kennedy having any health problems.
I don't think
if he did, then I think we would start asking for those records. But until then, I'm not so sure.
Well, in looking at him, I'd say he's modestly overweight, but not severely. And he is a former smoker. But I don't know that he still smokes, but he did smoke for many years. Alan Ellender, by the way, when he died in 1972, was 81 years old. So John Kennedy at 70 next month will be a relatively youngster compared to Ellender, who died as he was running for reelection. Mike in Villa Del Rey. Mike, you're on with Mark. Good morning to you.
I've noticed Senator Kennedy here lately, when I see him on TV, he's not using that cornball crap he uses. But if you take him, Higgins, and let's not forget the one that sold us out to the pharmaceutical industry, and Mary Landrieu, P.J. O'Rourke explained it all. Parliament of horse.
All right. Mike also is revved up, and he doesn't believe we're getting the best representation we should, but as Jimmy Buffett would say, it's our own damn fault.
That's right. Kennedy won overwhelmingly against, you know, Foster Campbell. You know, so it wasn't like a fall on the sword type of opponent that he went up against.
And another listener, this is Rob downtown, says, don't get away this hour without asking Mark about this. And this is, it is kind of unseemly, but it is something that I think is something people will be interested in. And probably most people do not know, but I am a Facebook friend of Trina Edwards, and I just pulled up a message that she sent to her Facebook friends. And Mark, she says, 2 weeks ago, I made the decision to have Edwin's body exhumed and cremated. I was not allowed to bury him in the plot he'd purchased for himself years ago, which forced me to make a last-minute decision that I regretted. It was well known by everyone close to us in the funeral home that burying him where I did was temporary until a decision about where I wanted his final resting place to be. I was unhappy to the point I was losing sleep at night because I did not like where he was, so she decided to cremate the man. And he is now on the mantle at their home in Ascension Parish. So Edwin Edwards, you know, I take pleasure in walking by and saying hello to Huey Long every August 30th on his birth date. September 10th is death date. I pay my respects to the great Louisiana governor. I won't have that same opportunity with Edwin Edwards unless I go knock on Trina's door, Mark.
Well, I need to go on Facebook more than I do. I don't know what to say about that other than, you know, she is his wife and presumably would know better than anybody else what he wanted. And so,
well, he did say
that. I don't know what to say.
He did say on this show many years ago that he would prefer to be buried in the National Cemetery downtown, and he is a veteran, and he would have had that option at no cost. My parents are buried in the National Cemetery in Little Rock, and there are three. I haven't been able. This is my first foray in looking at this. There are 317 comments from Trina. And I think most of them are supportive of her. And she was his wife, and she stood by him. I mean, you talk about a romance to have the romance begin in a prison. That's commitment. And she stayed with him after he came home as a convicted felon. But as a listener notes, Edwin Edwards went out with a flame rather than a whimper.
Well, that's true, but that's the way he spent his entire life. I mean, you certainly, you and I would probably, you know, on being sent to prison, probably would just spend the rest of our lives keeping our heads down, but he never did. And you got to kind of respect that.
Oh, yeah. Sent away for a 10-year sentence at 75 years old. That was intended to be a death sentence. I don't think there's any doubt. That was intended to put him away for the rest of his days, and he outlived the man who sentenced him, Frank Palazzola, the judge. And now Edwin Edwards has been cremated, and his ashes are at the home that he and Trina shared, and it was featured in the well-known show that aired for a few weeks, a reality program, The Governor's Wife. That was the name of it. Governor's Wife, one of the great programs in the history of television. Go right up there with All in the Family and some of the Seinfeld, you know, some of the great comedies of all time, Mark.
Really? I was putting it more of like the Donald Trump reality shows. I'm not a big fan of reality television, but, you know, it was... Well, it seemed a far-fetched premise to me.
Well, a few weeks ago, I watched with interest much of the PBS documentary from Ken Burns on Muhammad Ali, and it always bugged me that Ali, who was the greatest fighter of them all, he lost his final fight to a nobody, who ultimately did become a champion, Trevor Burbick. But still, Trevor Burbick, it won't go down as one of the great warriors, and Ali lost his last fight to him. And Edwin Edwards lost his last electoral fight, and really the only one he ever lost on election day, to one Garrett Neal Graves. So Congressman Graves has the pleasure of saying that he knocked out the Cajun Prince. He put him down for the count in 2014.
However, I spoke to Edwards prior to that vote, and he was pretty accurate on what he thought the turnout was. I mean, the final election was going to be. So I don't think that he was, you know, surprised by this at all.
No, but, and he was running in a gerrymandered district. If he had had the same sixth district that Marjorie McKithen did when she ran against Richard Baker, it would have been a closer race, no doubt. But Garrett Graves,
a closer race. But I think that I think we've kind of changed politically, even with the gerrymandered district, which was stacked up against him from the get go.
Well, thank you, Mark Ballard. It is always an honor and pleasure to visit with this erudite man. We'll try it again next Thursday. Until tomorrow, for Alondra Villarreal, I'm Jim Inkster. Thank you for listening. First Financial Tax and Accounting Services provides signature support. Stay safe and stay tuned.